hunger. You know, how hungry is this individual for success, and how ambitious is this individual?
Welcome to season two of the Super Podcast. In these conversations, we're bringing you even more insights from successful fellows and advice from leaders from across the UK research landscape. I'm Nikhil Ahluwalia, and this is brought to you by the British Junior Cardiologists Association in partnership with the BHF CRC. If you like these videos, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and leave your comments below. I'm really excited today to be joined by Sanjay Sharma, who is the Professor of Inherited Cardiac Diseases and Sports Cardiology at St George's University of London. There, he directs the largest sports cardiology unit in the UK and leads our largest cardiac screening program here in the UK as well, through his work with cardiac risk in the young. It's in these roles that Professor Sharma leads a prolific research group made up of pre-doctoral, doctoral, and postdoc fellows, responsible for a substantial proportion of our understanding of physiological and pathological cardiac states in athletes. Is a breadth of additional responsibilities and titles that we won't be able to cover today, including medical director of the London Marathon, the Prudential Ride London Race, London Olympics 2012, and many others that I can keep going. Now, Professor Sharma, I want to say a big thank you for taking time out to talk to us today, because your secretary tells me that the last few months have been exceptionally busy for you. So I do want to say a big thank you on behalf of everyone listening and watching today. And thanks so much for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure, Nikhil.
Great. So the purpose of this podcast really is to support and to inform trainees that are thinking about research or in the early stages. So I'm really glad to be able to talk to you about this, because you know, so many cardiology registrars and now consultants here in the UK and abroad have come through your research unit at St George's. And I was wondering, for anyone who isn't familiar with the setup you have there, if you could talk to us a little bit about who you supervise it, and also about the scale of how many fellows have come through your network.
Yeah, well, thank you. I basically lead the research team for inherited cardiac conditions and sports cardiology at St George's Hospital. This is quite a unique type of setup that we've got, because we're looking at individuals who've got heart muscle diseases or inherited electrical diseases. And on the flip side, we're also looking at people that have probably got the best hearts in the country, i.e. our top athletes. This whole unit is basically run, and I should say, predominantly by research fellows. So there are some of us that are funded through the National Health Service or by research grants, but the vast majority of our fellows are funded by grants from the British Heart Foundation, or predominantly cardiac risk in the young. And it's through this setup that the fellows embark on a senior degree, such as an MD Res or a PhD. But in the time that they're with us, and I usually say that's a minimum of 2 years, usually three, sometimes even 4 years, they're being trained in inherited cardiac conditions, sports cardiology, more advanced cardiac imaging, and even electrophysiology. So many of the individuals that work with us not only leave with a very good knowledge of inherited cardiac conditions and sports cardiology, they also have an additional skill such as MRI or advanced echo. And that serves them very well for jobs, because expertise in inherited cardiac diseases and sports cardiology is rare. And clearly, if you can appoint someone with these skills who can also do advanced imaging, that's always a welcome thing for many trusts and organizations.
You've got many fellows working with you now. Do you remember when you first took on a research fellow and who that was?
Yes, my first research fellow was in 2002. It was a chap called Jayesh Makan, who is now a consultant cardiologist at Shrewsbury. And his job was really to support me organizing my day. I had a database when I finished my thesis. I had databases of lots of things that we hadn't quite completed that needed publishing. So his job was to A, learn how to do research, write papers. But because I was working in a very busy district general hospital at the time, University Hospital Lewisham, and didn't have a dedicated registrar in cardiology, his job was also to shadow me. So in that time, He helped with my clinics. We had three really busy clinics, and I was just setting up the inherited cardiac diseases service and the heart failure service from scratch. and also setting up a TOE service and a pacemaker service. So his job was to help me with that. And you can imagine the amount of TOEs and pacemakers he implanted in that year, and the number of inherited cardiac condition and heart failure patients that he saw. And he was the first one, and he remains a very close friend. In fact, I met up with him only a few days ago. And then, of course, it mushroomed from there, really. We had a second fellow who was trained in India, a chap called Sandeep Basrajaya. He said he was interested in doing research, and he was looking for ideas. He seemed like a very, very committed and dedicated and enthusiastic chap. So he was my first true academic fellow who actually did embark on a project that I was very interested in. I was concerned that we really didn't know much about Black athletes and how they adapted to exercise. So his was really probably a seminal publication demonstrating really what the normal limits of exercise adaptation were, speaking either electrically or structurally. And that paper really put him on the map. And after that, he published several other big papers in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. He obviously went off and got a very good job. And after that, we've just never looked back. We then had a spate of, you know, I took on four fellows. That was very difficult because you were supervising four fellows, you know, on your own. But I was just very, very lucky that the fellows that we did take on were exceptional. Yeah, the standard was unbelievable, very, very mature in their approach. And it was then really that we moved from Lewisham Hospital to King's College Hospital. And it was me and the four fellows that then set up the Inherited Cardiac Condition Service at King's. We supported the heart failure service. Plus, we started then bringing in our athletes, you know, trying to think about a sport cardiology clinic. And all of those fellows ended up becoming, you know, consultants. There was one at St. Thomas's, one in Wales. One's now a senior lecturer, almost certainly become professor at St. George's at some stage. So, you know, everyone did very well from there on.
What is your process for evaluating a potential fellow in the early stages? I mean, do you have an interview? What do you look for to pick them out?
Yes, I mean, obviously an interview is important. I still believe that medical interviews could do better in that, you know, we interview once. It's the whole thing's dependent on someone's CV and a chat for 30 minutes. And that seems to decide, who, you know, how it's going to be. And you know, I normally go by my gut feeling, really. You know, obviously I do take into account where someone graduated, what sort of BSc they got, and, you know, whether they've got other things. But it's the sort of things that someone tells me. I think you've got a feeling about someone's commitment and their enthusiasm and what they really want to do, the hunger. I look for hunger. You know, how hungry is this individual for success, and how ambitious is this individual? That helps a lot. I look for someone being a team player, because it's very important that this individual realizes that it's not just about one person, it's about all of us. And we've got to move this ship together, and not just have, you know, someone sitting next to the captain and trying to move it by themselves. So I look for people who are good team players. I look for people who are hungry, who are ambitious, and who look like they are committed. I always tell them that the one thing that I do like is completion. You know, it's very, very important to state that at the front, that if I put something on someone's desk and I say to them, the deadline is in 3 months, and if they agree that they will do that project, it should be done in 3 months. So I usually push that on them. And I say this because myself, you know, I was a completer, but there were times where if I was prioritizing, I'd put something that I was supposed to complete on the back burner. And that, you know, got done 3 months after it should have been done. So that's something that I do push upon them. So we have got a very, very good team spirit. And, you know, in the time that I've been doing research, you know, I've supervised 27 PhDs and MD reses. And I think we have created in the time that I've been at 20 consultants all over the country who now, you know, run inherited cardiac condition services and sports cardiology. And some have even set up their own research program.
Yeah. You mentioned team spirit, and thinking about the perspective of a fellow who is not sure whether to go for a big group, a research group like yours, versus a more
intimate relationship with a supervisor who takes on maybe just one or two. You obviously went quite soon into taking four under your wing. Do you think there are advantages of that teamwork in that group that outweigh the other, or do you think it's there's some people who are suited to that team environment?
I mean, a one-to-one relationship is excellent. You know, being a consultant or a professor or, you know, a senior lecturer, you know, is not always what it's made out to be. It is quite a lonely place sometimes. You know, if you're extremely busy, you know, you're doing ward rounds, you're in the cath lab, you're trying to do research, and you are it. You know, you are the senior member. And yes, you may have support from your colleagues and people higher up that you could lean on. But to have someone like a friend that you can talk to, you know, a research fellow, where you can share issues that are going on at work, or even, you know, share some of the burden of work and support each other, is very, very good. And I felt that my relationship with Jayesh McCann and Sandeep Bazrajaya, and then with people like Michael Papadakis, Nabil Sheikh, Spear Gatti, you know, they were very, very important because, you know, we were really good friends. So it wasn't just that we worked, and of course, you know, you pulled rank every now and then, but you were very good friends. You know, you met up after work, you'd sometimes, you know, go out in the evenings and just catch up with each other. I think so the important thing is one-to-one is good, but even maybe 4 or 5 to 1 is good, provided I think that the supervisor recognizes that these individuals need support, not just in work, but sometimes to be taken out. And a bonding thing. I am very, very keen on team bonding. So I, until recently, until the COVID, had made it a priority that I took them out, you know, every 2 weeks for a drink or something to eat, so that we could just catch up and that we were all friends. And I think it's very important that happens. I always go around each one in the mornings asking how they are, how things are going. And they can all see that, because they can see me talking to an individual, but they can see that, you know, you're concerned about everyone's welfare. And I think that all bounces off each other, and they can see that everyone needs to be doing well. And I keep saying to people, you can either come out with 2 publications if you're just steering your own ship, or you could come out with 11 if you are supporting each other. And you know, I said people should come out with a fat CV, and not just with 2 big papers. And so that seems to be the ethos where we work. I also make it very, very clear to them that it's not a hostile environment, that everybody that I've appointed is supposed to be, you know, like-minded, very supportive. There is no point getting, you know, stressing out fellows. I think a stressed fellow is usually just not a very productive fellow. So you need to be as supportive as possible. And I think the thing that I would say is my biggest strength, apart from supporting team bonding, is teaching them how to write. So I will ask them to write a manuscript, but it'll come back to me. It'll go back, not electronically, but with a biro with red marks all over it and comments. And then it'll come back, and it'll go back with a fewer red marks. And eventually, after the 7th write, I'll say, now that looks like it's going to get published. And I think that exercise has helped all of them. They all write quite well because of this constant, you know, one-to-one exercise of how to write. I think that's probably my strongest, my biggest strength is teaching them how to write.
Do you think there's a difference in terms of when they join your group? So perhaps some join before they get a training number, some far further into their registrar work.
I think that's really dependent on what they really want, how they see themselves. We make it very clear to them when they come to our to do research, is that the place where we can support them, certainly in their careers, is inherited cardiac diseases, sport cardiology, or imaging, because that's our strength. If it's someone that wants to do something like electrophysiology, then we'd want them to join when they're a little bit more senior, when they've had a flavor of a bit of electrophysiology. If it's someone who's very, very junior in their career, we know that a lot of our research projects require echo. So we bring someone in at that level where they can actually start learning how to echo, progressing towards maybe getting BSc accreditation. So it really depends on which stage. I personally came out as a third year clinical registrar, and most of our individuals come out, you know, at ST5, sometimes ST6. We have had people coming out at ST4. And really, the project that they get is very dependent on their seniority.
Great. So in the final few minutes, I just wanted to ask for some takeaway messages, really, based upon your experience with the fellows you've worked with so far. So imagine you have a hungry fellow working under you. What is the most common mistake that you tend to see them make, and how do you go about rectifying it?
The most common mistake I see them make is they've come out of a very busy NHS job where they've got a set timetable, where they're either on call on certain days, doing a long shift on certain days, being in the cath lab until 12 noon, or doing a clinic. So it's a very, very structured system. Okay, there are stresses, covering for sick people, being double booked sometimes, having to be in clinic and being somewhere else at the same time. But then they come out of that really busy job with, they're free from the bleep, no bleep. And they're in this office where someone comes up to them like me and said, listen, mate, you are a grown-up man or a grown-up woman. I only used to tell my children what to do until they got to about 12 or 13 years old. And then I just monitored them and I didn't have to say anything unless I thought things were going off the path. I said, you're a grown-up. I'm not going to be telling you what to do. I'm going to tell you what is required of you. I will steer you. I will shape you, but I will never be chasing you up. So if you find in about 10 months' time you've produced nothing, we could be having quite a difficult conversation because I'm relying on you. So I tell them that they're their own boss. And you have to be, so my advice is you've got to be very, very disciplined. You've got to be absolutely clear in your mind that before you know it, 2 years will be over, sometimes three. You've got to make sure that you are driven, that you started at A, you said you were going to finish at B, you've got to make sure you finish at B within 2 years, on the understanding that you will be supported fully. Never be afraid to knock on your supervisor's door. Never be afraid to point out issues as soon as they occur, as opposed to being too fearful or too respectful and just letting things ride for about 5 months before you actually show up that there is an issue and that's why you're not progressing. They're all bright in the fact that they're cardiology registrars. They've done something right and they're clearly, you know, very driven. It's a very competitive field, so they've got the potential. I always say you've got the protoplasm. We just have to mold it in the right shape, you know, and that's our job. But they've got, we can't do it without their drive and their discipline.
Join us next time on the podcast for...
It's very important that the team got recognition. It wasn't just me. I wanted to put St. George's, certainly the sport cardiology and the inherited cardiac conditions team on the map. And I think I did that successfully.
In the second of this two-part series with Professor Sharma, he talks about his experiences in establishing sports cardiology as a subspecialty of its own and the importance of networking and his long-term vision.